Slow Pam Ewan as ever, and there is four of us again. We've swapped Harry out for Ben Kensel. How you doing, Ben?
I'm really good, thanks. Great to be here.
Thank you very much. Liam, we're back at Easter Road since Saturday. We interviewed Jake Doyle Hayes in October. He told us he was a goal scoring midfielder. Have we finally seen that?
I don't know where those came from, but frankly, I'm very grateful for him. I must say, I think Ben Kensel for Harry is probably one of the best substitutions.
Spec you and Ben in.
Yeah, brilliant.
Greg, how you doing, mate?
I'm very good. Jake Doyle, his pals can come over every week.
Right, Ben, again, thanks for joining us, thanks for having us tonight. Earliest football memory, grew up a Gillingham fan. What was football to you when you were a child?
Football was all about a kind of Premier League, really, for me. When watching it on TV, things like that. Never had the type of money to go and watch it live or anything like that. Wasn't brought up that way. My dad sort of took me to Gillingham because that was the closest club to where I grew up in Kent. And that was it, really. That was it. Kind of fixed on the terraces, loving it, bouncing around. But let's be honest, they're rubbish. And they have been for a period of time. So, but I still love it, still love it.
And out with the role you're in currently as CEO of the best club in the world, if there was another job you'd rather have in football, what would it be?
I think I'd like to end my career at Gillingham. I think that would be a bit of a fairy tale for me. I know it's about, sounds a bit romantic, yeah. Or kind of a bit soppy, but it's not really about, it's about the club that you support, isn't it?
Yeah.
Really. And I wouldn't say I've seen Gillingham that much over the years, but especially over the more recent years, just geographically, haven't been able to get to many home games, but been to quite a few away games, and just wouldn't mind finishing it all up there. That'd be great.
Yeah. And if you ever needed advice in your current role in football, who would be the first person you would pick the phone up to and ask a question?
Wow, in football,
or outside football?
Oh well, outside football, it's my dad. But in football, I've actually got a few, to be quite honest. One of them is a guy called David McNally, who actually used to work at Celtic for a short period of time. He was the CEO at Norwich. He also worked at Fulham as well, and he's just a good kind of sounding board for me. Speaks sense. He's been across the sort of football, non-football side, so. Yep. Quite like speaking with him. I've worked with some great people, so I kind of keep them close, and we don't really kind of trade secrets too much, but what we do is just chat through, and I think football's a bit of a small village, really. You kind of get to know a lot of people, and you shouldn't ever burn bridges, because everyone can help everyone at a certain point in time. So.
Yeah, and we've sort of stole this one from the club's Twitter channel on Friday night.
No, I came up with
that
originally.
The club stole it from me. Five-a-side team from current Hibs employees, non-playing staff. Do you make the team? Who else makes it?
I definitely wouldn't make the team. I'm rubbish. But we do play every, I think it's Wednesday night. And I haven't been able to make too many of them. But I would say there's definitely two or three that would definitely get in there. Guy called Murray Milligan, good player. Calvin, I think, is a good player over at HTC in the recruitment sort of scouting team. If I'm honest, we're not blessed on the non-footballer side.
A couple of vacancies on a Wednesday night.
So if anyone's half decent, wants to come down for a game, then they're more than welcome. So yeah,
Greg Beaut there taking both. He talks a lot on the podcast.
Yeah,
so.
I'd probably say I was half decent, but I don't know. I still play a bit there.
what position?
I'm a centre half. I'm very limited as a player.
Who would you compare yourself to?
Paul Hanley.
Someone like Maldini or something.
I love that.
Very modest.
I love that.
Very modest.
Love that. Look, if you could say one player for Hibs. Money was no object. Who would you be looking to bring into the club?
Oh, one player.
Not Martin Boyle.
Yeah, you can't say Martin Boyle.
No. For me, right, I look at it slightly different. Everyone will expect an attacking player. I would say N'Golo Kanté.
Why?
Because I always think that a player that can merge that kind of defence and attack and just be everything to everyone that you need on the pitch, I think is a special player. So massively underrated that position and massively important to a successful team. And if you look at the majority of the best teams in the world, they've got unbelievable kind of number sixes in their kind of squad.
Jake Doyle Hayes.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
Well, I'm playing with Busquets, to be fair.
Who's what, Jake Doyle Hayes?
Yeah.
Better chins.
To be fair, I wouldn't catch some Busquets scoring kind of goals like that. So.
Just pass it backwards. Wouldn't last a minute. You stood.
What would be interesting to ask Ian that question?
Yeah, well, we've just been joined by Ian Gordon. Ben's taken my job. Ian, if you could, well, try and introduce yourself first. You've not really spoke to the fans before. What's your role at the club? And if you could sign one player for the club, who would it be? There's one of the 2 minute questions.
All right, so my name's Ian Gordon, head of recruitment here at Hibs. And if I were to sign one player, Kante was my guy. What would be another good one? I would say probably Sergio Ramos. Kind of the veteran guy, the leadership, tons of heart.
Yep, love that shit house.
Yeah, exactly. Brings that cutting edge, a little excitement to the fans, so a little bit of all of that.
Yeah. And how have you enjoyed being at the club? When did you start your role and stuff?
Well, I started scouting a few years back, so summer 2019. So I've been in the, involved in the club for a few years now, but moved over full-time in June. But been loving it since. It's been an awesome move. Me and my wife love it very much. It's a great club to be a part of, and yeah, very excited to be here.
Brilliant. Well, I've got... We're going to go right into the transfer window. It's so such good timing that you've showed up for this. We're going to go right in, and I'm going to delve into difficult questions.
Takes the pressure off Ben a little bit. So.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm actually going to address this first one to you, Ben, if that's okay. Because I think there was quite a lot of talk about the summer window and how the summer window ended last year. And I think you said yourself that probably fell some way short of expectations, and you felt there was a need in January to remedy what went wrong in the summer. Just interested to know, what have we learned from that experience going into January, and what have we done differently as a result?
I think preparation is the first point that I would probably kind of point out. I think one of the things that I looked at, you've got to remember, I arrived early August properly into the business, and I'm relatively experienced now in football, so been at quite a few clubs, some big, some small, and ultimately I think one of the biggest challenges that I faced when I first arrived was really a lack of kind of preparation in some of the signings that we were already going after, and then in many ways a lack of kind of execution over them targets. So just a bit around process, and that's not to point the finger at anyone. I think sometimes there's a lot of finger pointing that goes on in football, and actually it shouldn't happen like that. We should all look at ourselves and actually think, how could we have done things better, and that's what the review was about at the end of the window. And I think the final day, without going into too much detail, kind of showed that perhaps that lack of preparation, that lack of process. And in the end, we missed out on key targets that perhaps the club wanted at that period of time. And it was all in all a disappointing window, but one that you probably learn from. And in my position, I kind of look at it and go, okay, fine, right, well, we have to move forward now. But we don't move forward without reviewing what's just happened, and more importantly, looking at what the squad is and the depth of the squad. And at that point in time, you think of one thing and one thing only. One, how can you support the objectives that you've put down as a club? I.e., you know, how can we back up the third place finish? How can we continue the great run in the cups? But you also think about, right, how can I support Jack in this sort of period of time? So that was quite tough, but it was also quite fresh for me. I come off the back of success at Norwich and failure, let's be honest. But you know, I kind of knew what we needed to do to get it right. And it was then a lot of hard work and a lot of process that needed to be put in place.
Brilliant. You used the word preparation a couple of times there. How did you feel the club were prepared for the eventuality of undoubtedly the biggest moment of this window and Martin Boyle leaving the club?
Well, actually, we were quite well prepared, mainly around the fact that it dragged for far too long. So we were made aware of the interest kind of at right at the very beginning of the window. But obviously that interest starts at a certain level, and that's not acceptable for this club. So therefore, it was always a case of it could get to that point, but was never certain that it would get to that point. if that kind of is as clear as it can be. Martin was as good as gold throughout the whole thing, but as it dragged on, of course, the number started moving north, and the number started to become really quite life-changing for Martin and beneficial for the club. We never wanted to let Martin go. We made that really clear. I remember having a really good, robust conversation with Martin where I was like, well, look, we've got value for you and on you, and we deserve that value because, you know, you're undoubtedly one of our game-changing players, one of our best players, and therefore, from that perspective, we don't want to let you go. You're very much part of what we're trying to build here under Sean, and also, you know, we think that we can be super competitive and achieve our objectives once again with you in the team. And then, you know, people get their heads turned by all sorts of things. And I don't think anyone can deny the fact that he goes with everyone's blessing because he was a phenomenal player. Absolutely. And I think if we all had the opportunity to earn a lot more than we're currently earning, we
catch you later. Yeah.
There you go.
I think we wouldn't have chosen Saudi Arabia, if I'm being honest, but, you know, I guess it's easy for us to say you'll have a club, but at the end of the day,
I'm off to Hibstock for a tenner a week. Like,
it's going to set him and his family up for life, and he's got to probably be selfish in that aspect. So nobody could really drive him off that.
Yeah. But were we prepared in the eventuality that he left? Yeah, we were. But ultimately, replacing someone like Martin is very, very hard. Yeah. Very difficult with the raw pace and the sort of, as Sean would say, 1v1 sort of attributes that Martin had. It's not easy to replace someone at any level like that. Because he was such a standout performer for us, it makes it almost impossible to do that within 10 days.
Yeah, I understand. You made some really interesting comments in your Hibs TV interview last week. All of us have listened to it and digested it. It was a really good interview. But one of the things that we picked out, especially from that, was the transfer committee that you talked about. Could you just talk to us a wee bit more about what the transfer committee looks like, who's part of that, and how decisions are made?
Yeah, it's probably quite a bit is made of kind of transfers and committees and things like that. For me, it's very simple that a transfer is not dictated by one individual. No one person at this football club makes a final decision on anything. What we have to do is we have to bear in mind that, you know, Sean will have a view, Ian will have a view, I will have a view, our owner, Ron, will have a view, and by virtue of that, it is a committee because it's a decision that is by committee. But obviously, it's my position to sort of bring that together and make sure that we make the right decisions for the short, medium, long term of the club. And someone has to make a decision. It's usually either myself or Ron. And if I'm honest, Ron would always make the decision over me. So therefore, I think the reason I use the word committee is because it's the best way to describe a collaborative approach to making a decision rather than quite a dictator-led sort of approach where it's, no, we will do it my way, which is not how we run the club here.
That's interesting. Ian, good to see you. You're obviously part of that transfer committee and your new role is head of recruitment. Could you talk to us just a wee bit more about what that role actually involves and how you go about identifying players from different markets? Because we understand you've been involved in the identification of a couple of different players.
Yeah, so I would say it's the recruitment team that we work together to kind of from very much a data-driven list to start with. And I'd say it's a combination between data-driven agent recommendations, the tight network of agents that we work with, and then live scouting. So from kind of those points, we kind of dwindle down the list as a team together, present those short lists throughout the committee, and that's kind of how we start the framework to pursue the target.
There's been quite a lot of talk in recent weeks and recent months about the Brentford model of recruiting players, and it's become one of these sort of buzzwords, I suppose, of football. So people talk about the Brentford model. Would you say that we, from what you know of the Brentford model, would you say we employ a similar kind of tactic to signing players?
Yeah, I think we have our own approach on it, but we definitely have taken some of their kind of methods that they put into their BT model and kind of their recruitment model. So there's definitely some similarities to grab from.
And what would you say, from your understanding of it so far, what would you say is the difference between signing a player who's signed for the A team, as it's called, the first team, and signing a player for the development or the B side?
I would say for the B side, it would be very much long term and with a very clear player pathway. So kind of long term recruitment that we know if we have to replace a first team player in that position, that we have a viable option in the B team. So it's something we really wanted to put a lot of focus on and prepare for the future.
and see the some of the new markets that we're delving into to sign players to the development team. So Alan Delferri, hope I got that pronunciation correct.
Ben Kessler's
giving me a nod, so it must be all right. And Emmanuel Johnson, obviously from the States. You know, we're delving into some different markets that perhaps we haven't explored before. Talk to me about the benefits of signing players for some of those different markets and maybe some of the potential drawbacks as well.
Yeah, I would say for us, I think as a club, we wanted to stretch our network of players that we were pulling from. So I think that was a big step for us to markets that we were comfortable with the contacts we had in those countries to pursue those targets. I guess always the drawback with that is, you know, the adjusting to the Scottish game, adjusting to life in Edinburgh, the weather, all, everything that it brings, because it's a massive adjustment. So I think, you always have those drawbacks, but I think as a club, we have to be adventurous and try new things, and it's markets that we think can really benefit us in the long term.
Cool.
Can I just come and say, I think we're a fan media outlet, I guess, but a lot of fans will say, oh, if they're good, if they're old enough, they're good enough, young, like, how do you assess as a 20-year-old ready for the first team? Is he ready for the? Does he have to spend in development time? And is there a view to how long they spend in that, or is it totally unique to circumstance?
I think that's where Sean comes into it, and he's probably the third wheel here. That's not in the room. I think Ian clearly has to identify the players. I'm across kind of the decision making and the pathway and the finances and the general health check of the club and where that fits in. Sean and his coaching team, as well as Steve Keane, they need to understand and decide when that player is ready, when that player can make an impact. Because I think what we do is we make this old age kind of challenge an issue in the UK especially, where we sign a young player and then we either dismiss him out of hand if he makes his debut and it's a bit flat,
yeah.
Or perhaps he misses some chances or whatever. Oh, he's not ready. What a terrible signing. But also, if he scores in his first game,
yeah.
Then suddenly he's a superstar and the expectations are sky high. And I think what we've got to be is more balanced around it. You know, I said this in an internal team brief the other day. You know, we're dealing with young players that will make mistakes. And what they need at that age, like we all did when we were younger, as you guys are at the moment, it's almost like you need support. And what you don't need necessarily is you don't need kind of unnecessary criticism, because yeah. it massively affects your confidence. Whereas when you're a bit older like me, you kind of it rolls off the back a little bit, and you kind of go, well, there's some ups, there's some downs, but I don't get too up, don't get too down. And the challenge is with young players, they want to play all the time and they believe that they're ready. But equally, at the same time, the beauty with Sean and his coaching methodology and style, and Steve Keane as a much older head, he won't thank me for saying that, but he's been there, done it, and seen good players come through the ranks. And therefore, it's all about timing, it's all about good coaching, and it's all about dipping in and out appropriately to get the best out of them. And I think that's kind of up to them. Yeah. That's their secret. We don't meddle in that. There's no picking teams here. It's
yeah.
It's very much their domain. On the grass is their domain.
I guess there's probably been a little bit of frustration from fans when we're sending these players into the B team. They're almost a bit more impatient to get them in yeah. the first team. What would you say to those people? Would you say, like, just, you know, be patient and allow them to develop?
Yeah, I mean, I think I said it the other day around almost trust the process. Yeah. And you know, we are going to get some wrong, yeah. but we want, the idea is that we get the majority right and very few wrong. And there's no exact science with this. But what I would say is we've got in the right characters, firstly, with the right kind of cultural philosophies around joining in, coming together, and they will get the best level of kind of coaching, and they will have the opportunity to play. And they're buying into that as players. We're selling it to them as young players, and Sean's doing a great job of giving them that pathway through. But equally, they've got to earn it,
yeah.
and therefore they will only play when they're ready. Because we don't want to give out debuts to players. They've got to earn them. Yeah. When they do earn them, they've got to then deliver. Because it's an absolute privilege and pleasure to play out, you know, Easter Road or in this league, full stop. So they've got to earn the right. And these young players that come over, they're young, they're hungry, they're driven, but equally they've got to be good enough.
Yeah.
I think, Yeah, because nobody's moving for Belgium or America or Norway just to sit, and they're not going to move just to sit in a development squad for 3 years and then go home again. They've obviously got long-term career.
Sure, these players want to achieve as well. You know, they probably come and look at the infrastructure of the club and look at the stadium, the training centre. They want to achieve
a bit of a nod to Ian on this one. The you know, people have to look at where we're signing players from as well. Yeah. You know, Bode Glimt as a club, people talk about, you know, that they do a job on Celtic, a really good job on Celtic. Well, you know, but this is it. People forgot about Roma and the fact that they embarrassed Mourinho, you know, and the team there over. But people forget about that.
Said that with chest.
and I think the thing for me is you know, we sign a couple of young players from their what is effectively their kind of reserves, we'll call it.
Yeah.
But they're in and around a team that is a really humble setup over there. And we've got good contacts over there in Greg and others that we've got really close relationships with. Now, these players, just because they couldn't break through or they weren't quite good enough to play for Bode Glimt, that's just beaten Celtic, beaten Roma, and been very successful in their own right for such a small club. Well, there's no reason why that isn't an opportunity for us to then give them a platform. But once again, they've got to be good enough, they've got to be ready, they've got to be given time to sort of adapt to the Scottish game, which is actually a really competitive, very physical, quite fast-paced league. And I think sometimes, not from me, definitely not, because I love the Scottish game, but a lot of people look at it, perhaps from the UK or from other leagues, and perhaps feel that they can compete in the league. They get here, and it's a lot tougher than they probably think.
Have you been surprised by that in your 6 months?
Not for me, because I was always quite a fan of the game. And I've said, you know, I love the cut and thrust of it. Still to this day, my favourite match of the season, believe it or not. People will say Rangers, people will say, you know, that unbelievable semi-final. But for me, it was the first game of the season at Motherwell, because the atmosphere was banging. It was cut and thrust. It was like, it was proper sort of football played in the purest sense. Yep. And yeah, there was a bit of euphoria around COVID and coming out the other end of that. But I love that day. I still will. It's my first sort of day in the seat, we'll call it. We came out on top, but you know, Motherwell are no poor side.
Yeah. Same again in a couple of weeks' time. We segue there. Yeah.
Let's hope so.
I think a big thing is, like, a lot of people have a joke and say their dad could score up here, but you look at some of the players that have come up here and failed, like Joey Barton. He was a big name in England, and he's come up here and he's ultimately failed. So it's not an easy league, and I think people probably come up here and people like Jamie O'Hara can say what they want, but it's not an easy league. It's very physical and it's very in your face, and I think a lot of people struggle with that.
I'm going to really desperately try to get us back on topic and talk about the players, because you guys are great guests, but actually it's the players that fans are typically most interested in.
As they walk out, is the podcast over?
Sorry to let you know that. Elias Hoff-Melkerson, he is the I think the one January signing that every Hibs fan was united in. I am excited about this boy. And there were some other very good signings too, but Melkerson's, I think, the one who's really captured the support's imagination. Something a bit different. Again, we touched on the fact he's come from a different market, goal scoring record. Ian, can you talk me just through what went into the signing of Melkerson? So kind of end-to-end process in terms of identifying him as a player and then convincing him ultimately to come and sign for Hibs.
Yeah, so I would say Melkerson was first flagged up as last summer. It was widely reported that we were after another Norwegian player in the league.
Yep, yep.
So he was kind of flagged up to begin with through that research. From then, kind of just monitoring him throughout his first loan at a somewhat higher level than he was playing previously. So we just monitored him over the few months, live scouted, used contacts that we had at the club at Bode Glimt. A lot of references went behind kind of the long-term vision of going after someone like him. He's someone that we believe in the long term. So someone that, you know, we always knew would need time to adjust. We're quite excited about him going forward, and a lot of work went into getting him over the line.
Yeah, I think I speak for all Hibs fans. I say we are very excited, and I think we'll get quite some reception when he makes his debut at Easter Road. Another one that's really interested fans over the course of this month has been Rocky Bashiri, who signed from Norwich on one of your previous haunts, Ben. Can you talk to us a wee bit about what went into the signing of Rocky? Is that okay?
So firstly, Rocky was a player that was a player of interest anyway. Let's make this really clear. Sean had made references to Rocky when we first started talking. Once we knew that Sean was going to join us, just mainly by my background being in Norwich, it was one of the Belgium kind of young players that he had been across. I think we were lacking depth, and I think I've said that across the whole squad, and Ian recognises that, and I think even Jack would probably testify to that as well. You know, a few injuries and ultimately we struggle.
Yeah.
So one of the areas was clearly centre back that we needed to improve and bring in some depth there. And I think much was said around, you know, our lack of depth, but our lack of addressing it in the summer window. So it was one of our priority targets to bring someone in the back line. I knew that Rocky wasn't featuring at Norwich, but for no real reason except for the fact that perhaps he didn't have the match, kind of the matches under his belt, had the quality, had a bit of an injury record, but ultimately never really had the opportunity to bounce back from that. Obviously, knowing the guys down there, there was an opportunity then to bring him up, and just went down there and made that happen. But the it's very different when you're trying to do something like that, because you have to bear in mind the player's kind of conditioning and injury records and things like that. He is a great character, firstly, great character. Actually loves Edinburgh already, loves the fans, loves being. He's very blessed that he feels he's been given the opportunity to play here. But he, you know, he needs game time,
yep.
and will improve. And he's 22 and needs coaching, needs support, and has good players around him that can help him better. So, I think the one thing that's probably lacked in this window is a lot of people keep on talking about loan signings. Ultimately, a player like Rocky, we could sign tomorrow if we wanted to.
Yeah.
It's a trigger. That's all we need to do. We don't need to wait for the obligation. There's an option there for us. Same with Ewan, he's our player. You know, and same. Ultimately, as Sylvester Jasper as well. So I think the way that we almost position these signings or position these players coming in, that's changed a lot under Ian and myself, where there's no point in having a player that comes in and doesn't give us the opportunity to then build the more sort of medium term around them. And I think too many clubs make the mistake of perhaps bringing a player in, getting that impact initially, and then going, yeah, now he goes back to the club. And what we've basically done is then improved the player, given him the platform to then go on and play elsewhere. And that's not what we should do. We should be giving that player a platform to play. And more importantly, they should continue their career trajectory at Hibs. And that's what we are able to do now with some of the things that we've done.
Plenty of examples in recent memory for Hibs fans of signing players on loan without that option to buy at the end of the contract, then shooting the lights out, and then the frustration in the summer window that you can't actually then sign the player on a permanent basis.
Yeah.
Greg Docherty is a good example. Lee Griffiths, cover back, is another good example of a player who we've, you know, invested time and effort into improving as a player and not had the options.
I think we've seen the knock-on effect as well in the past at Hibs, where we have brought players on loan and they've known they're only coming for 6 months and they've maybe not been fully invested in it. And let's be honest, we can all think of a day that comes straight to our head that there was too many lone players in that team, players that didn't get the club. One of the players who went on to have a pretty good career said he was going to do a day of shopping in Edinburgh before going back to Wolves. Like, that's not really the characters that as fans we want to see on the park.
That's a whole attitude thing as well. Like, I'm not fully saying that these players are unprofessional, but I think
at that time they were. It was obvious they were.
The culture at the club was horrific, but I think when you see players coming up with options to buy, it almost gives the fans, well, actually, we can have them if they impress. And I think that's a big thing, because it's all about continuity. There's no point chopping and changing the squad every 6 months.
I think as fans as well, we just want basic stuff. Like, we want players to get the club to enjoy being here. Like, Hibs fans are in love with Chris Cadden just now. He's a fantastic player, but you see him when Jake Doyle Hayes scores that second goal at the weekend, he's celebrating more than Jake Doyle Hayes. And we do like bare minimum stuff. We do like players that will just run themselves onto the ground and how we would do it.
And Cadden's definitely one that fits in that category from day one. The minute he came here, he just got it. And when players connect with a club like that, you can forgive 5 out of 10 performances, because ultimately they've got that connection with the supporters, and you guys are more fit than anyone else. Anyway, I am really interested.
Tangent FC tonight.
This is the question I've been wanting to ask. Since we knew we were going to interview you guys, this is the question I really wanted to ask. and it's about transfer deadline day. Because from a supporter perspective, transfer deadline day, I turn in an absolutely terrible shift at work on transfer deadline day because I am literally sitting refreshing Twitter.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the forums. I'm trying to see what's going on.
To see what comes up.
And it's a fascinating day, but I'm really interested to know from your perspective and from Ben's too, actually. What's transfer deadline day like from your point of view, and is it as intense as perhaps some documentaries would paint it out to be?
No, go on, you go first.
Well, I would say the transfer deadline days that I've been a part of, obviously COVID kind of broke some of that up, but the three that I've been here for, they are pretty mad. it's kind of last minute things that you can never prepare for. Trying to get things over the line last minute if you're unprepared. And it is a bit of a crazy day. It keeps you on your toes for sure. And you're quite happy when midnight strikes.
Are you happy though?
Well, that's good point.
I think for me, it's to talk you through it. No deal is ever done in the last minute. And what I mean by that is the deal has either been struck an hour earlier or the paperwork is going through. So when you hear about these things happening at sort of 5:02, well, no, the deal may have been done at 5:30, for example, and then the paperwork is just being done. It's being uploaded on, which is all very boring for probably the listeners, but there is a certain administrative kind of piece that has to happen before the deadline.
Don't use fax machines anymore.
Yeah, is that still a thing?
So I know that on Sky Sports, it's like, oh, have they got the paperwork in and
things like that? So there is a definite drop-dead deadline when it comes to the papers needing to be signed by all parties. And obviously we fell foul of that in the summer. As Sylvester Jasper is a good example, it was literally, I think it was about a minute past the deadline.
I was sleeping by that point.
Well, ultimately from our perspective, that wasn't really that tight.
Yeah.
Okay. It was just a case of the information was getting through, and then it was a case of, right, we'll settle the paperwork now, and ultimately, if you've got 10 minutes to spare, that's a fair amount of time, to be quite honest.
So it was you in your bed by 9:30, but a couple of old team just chilling out.
No, I mean, I was there, but it was more a case of I think a lot is made of it, and the media and Sky Sports have done a great job in hyping that up.
Yeah.
But I do think a lot of clubs that have got their ducks in a row have actually probably structured things. The where Ian's absolutely right is the outs. So when people come to you, sort of coming after a player, suddenly I didn't even see that coming. That's come left field. There's a ton of speculation that flies around. Some of it is kind of real. Some of it is so false, it's unreal. And I think that's the challenge with media in general these days, is that all someone needs to do is just drop something on a Twitter feed saying, Now, Hibs are in for X or Y, and then suddenly it's fact, and it's definitely not. And
well, we've got a story about that, funnily enough.
I single-handedly drove Kettle Knutson into the manager favourite odds with the bookies from nowhere to 92 second favourite on the basis of me sending out a few tweets. Good effort. Eh?
So there you go. We have an opening in our comms department.
listen, just going to finish up here on the transfer window, and that last question on the transfer window, we talked at the very, very start of this segment just about, you know, the summer window and it kind of falling short of expectations. I'm interested to know, context, it's obviously kind of mid to late February, if you had to give the January window a score out of 10, what would you give it and why?
Yeah, I'd give it a 7. The reason I give it a 7 is because I think we addressed areas where we were lacking in depth across the park. I believe that it was probably too busy as a window. It was too transitional. There was too much change in that window. You wouldn't really encourage that much change usually. A bit of a revolving door, and you don't really want that at a football club. You want it to be a little bit more processed, is what I would say. The reason it's not higher than a 7 is because of losing Martin.
Yeah.
And I genuinely believe, I'll say it again, I think if we had retained Martin, then I think we would have been looking at one of the best transfer windows that we've had in a long, long time at the club. But we didn't. therefore we have to face up to the fact that we lost a very good player that that severely dented our kind of offensive options. Was it perfect? By no stretch. Are there gaps? Yes. Were we ever going to deliver a 9-10 out of 10 window? No, because there was too much change required.
What would be a 10 out of 10 window?
Well, I think having probably another month. I mean the sheer amount of business that we were doing in that period of time was just ridiculous, really. So there's only so much you can do in that period of time, and obviously you've got all the negotiations, so you're spinning multiple plates while you're trying to do one, and people go, oh great, we did our work quite early, we got sort of three or four in within the first week. Well, no, that work started in November, December time to tie them down. So I think the aim for us is quality over quantity moving forward.
I just think with the transfer window as well, I think a 7 out of 10 is probably fair. We spoke about it before in December time, saying 3 or 4, it's January, you're never going to end. I think people, because the club probably fall on their own sword by getting 3 or 4 players in the first couple of days. It's the winter break, we're all buzzing. We're like the hangover for New Year's coming down, and then a couple of weeks in, we still want more, we want more. Hibs could sign 10 players in a window and we'd still want someone on deadline day. It's just the way fans are.
And I think as well, like, two of you start off the window so well, it's very, very difficult to keep that going.
Yeah.
And I think there was a couple of outgoings, obviously, towards the window, and people maybe looking for them to be replaced as well, but it's far too late in the window to replace them. So.
Yeah. Centre midfielder? Was there ever a centre midfielder? Was there ever maybe potential of us looking in centre midfield without talking specifics? Because obviously, we've had to kind of put Lewis Stevenson into that position a couple of times, and he's done very, very well. I must say, Lewis Stevenson, never less than a 7 out of 10, wherever you put him in the pitch. But we've obviously had to draft him, and there was a centre midfielder ever potentially looked at.
We know that we're lacking in that kind of defensive centre midfield role, that kind of anchor that can hold it together. We're working on sort of potential targets. What I would say is that you've got to remember, if you can't get the right person in that window, don't bring someone in that won't improve you. And that is the cardinal mistake that some clubs make, is that they make a signing for making a signing sake. And we're not going to do that at this club, not at all.
Talking of documentaries and doing that sort of stuff, you look at something like that, and Jack Ross said, don't put any more than 2 million at the Will Gregor, I don't know what they paid, it was over like 3 million. And it was pure panic buying. And that shorted, because although he was scoring goals, like,
it was league below as well, wasn't it?
He was league below. He came on a sudden and he really didn't hit the ground running. I think maybe a wee bit more research, they maybe would have found the right character. But
I know we said we were wrapping up on the transfer window, but if you've ever listened, that means absolutely nothing on this podcast. See, just with transfers in general, obviously fans, we live off rumours, and maybe, I don't know who it would be, but how many times do you reckon you pick up the phone on deadline day or in the last week of a window to either say no, you're not having them, or trying to sign players, compared to what fans actually find out about?
I mean,
a couple hundred.
How many PowerPoints do you show to Sean?
No, I mean, we do our list pretty early on, and you know, we just kind of work through that list as it goes, but in terms of the rumors, I mean, there's so many that are just left field that we've never been across, that haven't even been brought up in discussion. But I mean, for our side of things, we identify our targets very early, and we kind of work through that list as the months go past till, you know, we reach hopefully the completion of the deal.
Ian, just in your position, obviously we changed the manager in December. How much does that change what you're looking for when we go from Jack to Sean Maloney?
Yeah, I think that definitely kind of was a big road bump for us, as we had done a lot of work early on under Jack. So when the changes happened, a lot of the same positions stayed the same. But kind of the style of play obviously needed to change. So we needed to put a lot of work into how we looked at the players. And so we made minor adjustments to the targets that we had been working on. But as you guys could see with the window, we still kind of went after a lot of the targets we had previously had on the list.
I know you said you've done a bit of scouting, I know, to take it all the way back, but a lot of Hibs fans will be interested to see where we're actually scouting, if you can disclose that information.
Are there any markets maybe that we're not yet in that you'd like to explore?
We'd like to explore. Because I know we've obviously
lots.
Yeah, totally lots.
Dipped into the American market. We
really? Yeah, I think for us it's definitely the American market and Scandinavian market are going to be key focus going forward. But, you know, it's never one set market or a couple set markets. We're always going to be looking everywhere. To answer your question, kind of, I think a market that we would love to get into is obviously the Asian market is one that we think the club going forward could be looking into exploring. Obviously, yeah. Obviously, Celtic have started that and it's gone quite well. But yeah, just it's a market, and you find when you reach out to these different markets, the level of interest these players show in a club like Hibs is awesome. They jump at the opportunity. They always seem very interested. Whereas, you know, sometimes when you're going down south trying to recruit a guy, it's not quite the same level of interest on their end.
I guess the Brook player sells itself, but it's up to the club to sell the club itself. Well, this is a question for you, Ben. What's the sort of difference in the side of policy at Norwich versus Hibs?
So the structure is fundamentally different. We have a sporting director at Norwich, in Stuart, we're a fantastic guy. Budgets are obviously different, and you know ultimately the fundamentals of signing a player are very 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 similar, and the process that you go through to identify. I think, you know, what Ian hasn't sort of probably covered off is that very similar to most clubs. You know, we've got sort of a list of players in each position. That follow the sort of the attributes that the manager wants to see in them position, in them players, and in them positions. So, you know, the fundamentals of that are very similar, but obviously your budget changes and dictates that. I personally don't see that there's at a club of this size necessarily an advantage or a disadvantage of having a sporting director or not having a sporting director. I feel that a bigger club probably requires a sporting director. I think that it becomes too much of a role. The CEO role becomes too much. It's pretty all encompassing anyway. But you can have a foot in either camp when you're dealing with a club the size of Hibs, and that's no disrespect to it. I actually think it's a very kind of manageable size, especially if you've got good people around you.
Sorry, just interjecting again. It's been quoted in the past that Norwich aimed to be in the top 23, it might be a misquote, of English football. Coming to Hibs with the expectation is that probably over expectation of third or fourth regularly winning the cup every year, even though it took us forever.
Why is that an over expectation? I don't see that. I'm fiercely defending of this. I actually think this club should be.
We should be, but then I think it was not to throw them under the bus, but we're having a conversation before. If you look at our history, we maybe do over expect a little bit, maybe mismanagement, shall we say, in the past. But how does that change when a club that demands being at the top level of the Scottish game compared to Norwich, whose expectations were maybe a little bit different?
Well, I think the one thing that the fundamental difference is that every other year you're either trying to stay up or you're either trying to go up, which is obviously obvious at Norwich, but ultimately at Hibs, no, I'm excited and passionate about being really adamant around what good looks like, and this club should be in the kind of top four consistently. It should go deep into the cup competitions consistently, and they're the standards that we set. So I don't know. Well, I'd be really disappointed if anyone internally wasn't clear on what the goals were, and more importantly, wasn't clear that we could achieve them. Mm-hmm. So that's probably one thing that I just won't. I won't hang around if people think that fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth is good enough. Because I'm not here for
the pessimist coming out of me, really.
so for me, I kind of applaud the sort of high expectations the fans have. I think where I question sometimes is the kind of the support in terms of, you know, support the players.
Yeah.
Players make mistakes. Okay.
Example of that on Saturday.
We've seen that on Saturday before Edinburgh. They're young. Either a player had actually kicked the ball.
It's called what it is. It's absolutely fucking pathetic. Yeah. Sorry.
It was embarrassing. It's quite a conversation that Sean would need to have with the players. That's not as reflective of what Sean thinks of the players.
Yeah. But I also think, once again, we're dealing with human beings. We're not dealing with robots here. Right. So they are going to make mistakes. But I defy anyone that doesn't think that team goes out wanting to be the best version of themselves, win games, and be kind of adored by the fans. They don't go out there going, I'm going to sack this off, I'm not going to put the effort in, and I'm going to misplace passes everywhere and miss opportunities. No one goes out there thinking that, or what they want to be the best that they can be, and they want to be successful at Hibs. So I think that's where I get more frustrated. But equally, you pay your money, you're a fan, you deserve to have an opinion, and you know, and you can voice that opinion. What I would say is that don't ever mistake the fact that we want exactly the same thing that all fans want, and that's a successful Hibs side that we can be proud of. And I genuinely believe we're trying to work our way to that. But if you're a 22-year-old or a 21-year-old, and you know, I got given a stat today that said that I think in the top seven countries we were something like, we had the lowest. We were second lowest on the average kind of. Now that isn't
was that the weekend though?
Yeah,
yeah. Because I said, was there only maybe Lewis Stevenson over the age of 24 in the starting lineup, roughly, maybe Nisbet as well, maybe or something.
But,
but ultimately, you're dealing with young players that we should be proud of. Now they are going to make mistakes, but forgive them for their mistakes, support them. And you're only going to get the best out of them if you take that approach. Whereas if you jeer and boo, what's that going to do to your own self-confidence? It's going to make you play safe, play backwards, and not play offensively and attacking like you've been coached by Sean. And Sean can do nothing from the sidelines on that.
Yeah.
Let's bear that in mind. You know, Sean can only coach them during the week, give them the instructions, prepare them for the game. But their emotions go through a massive roller coaster when they're going out there. And I'm just protective of that because I think people need to understand that support is the way that we're going to get the best out of these players collectively.
Yeah. Back to you, Greg.
Paul Briggs is quite nice on the younger players and the strategic partnerships we have with people like Charleston and Stenhouse Muir, Edinburgh City. Paul, like the UE, is there any plan for the B team to go to a lot of these clubs to maybe get first team experience and experience in the Scottish game at a lower level?
Yeah, I think for us, let's talk about the Edinburgh City one to be specific at first. I think for the plan for that is a really good one, that we're able to keep these guys training at HTC majority of the week. They go and play senior games on the weekend. So that'll be very beneficial going forward. So we'll identify three players each season that we think would benefit most from that in a very strategic way. We have now Eddie May is the loan manager, so he's kind of heading up that process. He's been fantastic in that. And then the Charleston one, as you kind of saw with the EJ, is we're going to use it as an avenue kind of to recruit in that market and a way for our players to get senior minutes before making the move across the pond. And we'll also have players that we have come up through the academy that maybe need to play in a different market to get better settled. So we'll use Charleston as that opportunity. And I think, it's an exciting partnership on a number of fronts. So we're excited to see where it goes.
Perfect. And I guess in terms of the product on the pitch, I guess season ticket sales might be quite difficult on the back of pretty up and down 6 months on the pitch. That's my question for you, Ben. What are we likely to see in terms of a campaign to help strengthen those numbers?
Yeah, it's probably number one priority off the pitch. But actually, on the pitch relates to what happens off the pitch as well, right? Fans want to be entertained. They want to watch a successful side. They want to believe in Sean and the pathway that we're sort of trying to provide here. Look, the numbers need to improve. If they improve, it helps the performance, helps the atmosphere, helps the club coffers. But ultimately, we've got to give them a reason to buy. And that's why things like the Football for a Fiver kind of initiative that we've got going makes it affordable for supporters to come that can't afford it otherwise. But, you know, season ticket holders will always be the sort of the heartbeat, the lifeblood of the club, because they're the ones that commit on a regular basis, to support the club through thick and thin. So let's never look past them, first and foremost. But the idea is to grow that number from, we'll say, kind of 11,000, and we want to get that back to where it should be, 12.5, 13, that sort of level. I think it's never been more expensive to support your team, right? Yeah. So I get it. Like I say, I'm a football fan myself, so it's not easy. And therefore, we've got to find other ways of unlocking the ability for floating fans to come to the game, and then we've got to entertain them when they're here. And I think what I like is Ron's been really open in investing in the match day experience, big screens. There's more to come with that next season. So I think on the whole, we know that it's the number one priority to grow it, but equally at the same time, I think there's loads of different variables at play that come into play with that.
Yeah, I think as well, just on the football for a fiver, I think you've probably seen the general mentality of Hibs fans donating a lot of tickets and donating brilliant, a lot of £5. And obviously, going back to attendances, that will increase that. I guess it's how we keep the attendances at that level. I guess, is there any sort of fun ideas or anything the pipeline to entice fans back?
Yeah, I mean, we're pretty much overhauling how we reward and incentivise kind of season ticket holders. Simple things like when I first came here, I didn't realise that we just didn't communicate with season ticket holders. So we expect people to renew their season, and we don't even write to them. We don't even incentivise them in a certain way. So I think there's going to be a lot of changes at the club, but what I'm not going to do is just throw promises at everyone. I'm just going to say, look, let's do this in a really structured process way that rewards people. And it may only be that it may be subtly done. So it might be that this summer, for anyone that renews before a certain point, they get certain benefits, whether it's pre-season friendly, whatever it might be. That's how you build that kind of sense of loyalty around, actually, they do value me. They do care about me. And then what we can do is we can add in specific one-off ticket initiatives like Football for a Fiver, which fills the ground. Because we're never going to, in my opinion, get to a point where our season tickets kind of sell out the ground pretty much, because we're just not that place. But that's the idea, is can we build it, but actually still value the season ticket holders that are there and grow it appropriately.
It was quite a good initiative a few years ago with Cup Top Up. If you bought a season ticket, you get Cup games at home.
Even then, it went up to £20 or £30 as well. I think initially it was free. And then some, just on that incentive, the derby that's coming up in April, there's a fair chance it's not going to be on the TV. You've got 11,500 people going for 3,000 tickets. This lot are giving me 25 references to get tickets. Loyalty points was something
don't
the club had. it's a stress for me sitting in that queue. Loyalty points was something the club had before. Do you think there would ever be a view to bringing that back? It got a bit messy, I think, with what they were giving out for HSL donations and stuff. Do you think they would ever look to do that again with match tickets?
I think nothing's off the table in terms of will we or won't we. I think the survey's been a big thing for me. You know, we've had over 10,600 respondents to the survey, and I'm like a massive believer in actually communicating, but not just communicating and saying you're going to communicate. Actually, do it in a clear and concise way so you get the results back, and then you can base it on fact rather than just another opinion. So, you know, as part of the survey, there'll be some fan forums that we do. And focus groups that really focus on, you know, specific topics and stuff like that. So if loyalty was one of them, we'd start to get a bit of an understanding and a sense check from some fans around what does loyalty look like and how would you want to be rewarded and how can that benefit. And I just think that's, you know, all these things should be considered rather than just rushed out, and the survey will hopefully sort of give us that insight to be able to do that.
Finally, question for both of you: if you had the one wish for Hibs in 2022, what is it and why?
Oh, I mean, do you know, I have a strange one and then an obvious one. I'd love to win a cup for this club, full stop. I'd love to see that them type of scenes. Yeah. I think the fan base deserves it. Deserves that success from all the recent trials and tribulations it's been through. So I'd love to be able to see that while I'm at the club. And then in a short-term one, because I haven't seen it or heard it yet, I'd love to hear Sunshine on Leaf at some point. And, you know, I haven't...
Just come pub on Friday night.
I haven't actually heard that yet. And that was one of the... I've got a good friend in Grant Holt, and he's actually up at the weekend. He's coming up for the Celtic. And for the Celtic match as well, and the rugby and everything like that. And he said it's the most incredible club, and when you win and you win big, it's spine tingling, and that kind of got me. That was the moment where I was like, yeah, okay, I'll go, and I still haven't had that moment yet, and I kind of wanted that moment, and I'm still going to wait for that moment. So that's going to be special, and I'm glad it doesn't happen that often. because it, when it does happen, hopefully it will be quite special.
There was a period of time where it was getting put about like someone up George Street on Saturday night, like, but because it was after, I'm sure it got played after like an Aberdeen game at home or something, and it's not that everyone's walking at stand, nobody can be bothered. It's got to be like under the lights, derby wins, cup wins.
We were expecting the semi final, to be honest.
Yeah.
And although there wasn't a lot of Hibs fans, we did make some pound of noise, so we were expecting it there. Probably quite disappointed.
Well, you're selling, what would be your wishes?
I'd say touch on those, but yeah, I would say definitely a cup win. And I think in the short term, the season is to qualify for a European spot and have that start becoming the norm going forward. I think that is essential. For what we're trying to do.
Who's your way in Europe if we got through? And we get into fast forward through to August. Which team do you want in the Europa League qualifiers?
Why qualifiers? Why not group stage?
Let's start off.
Rome
was not built in a day.
Take like a Galatasaray, something like that.
Happy Disney, small club.
Exactly.
St. Johnston drew
small club.
Hey, Mel.
To be honest, I'll take anything because it means that we're there. It means that we get there. So, yeah, no, at this stage, I'll take anything.
You look like Adam quite enjoyed Santa Coloma.
Would you like to see Hibs go up against an English team in Europe?
Yeah, well, not even in Europe. I actually think we need a complete revamp of the kind of cup competitions. I'd love to see kind of a cup competition like a Carabao Cup kind of start to move across, you know, the UK a little bit more, because I think there would be real interest in that from the Scottish game, from the English game, from even the Welsh. You know, I think it's something that we're missing at the moment. I also think it would bring much needed sort of income and commerciality, and it would probably break down the barriers between perhaps that perception of different leagues.
Yeah.
So I'd love to see a kind of UK wide kind of cup competition. And I think our Hibs fans would love an away tie somewhere, you know, away
like,
not
if we're like back in England.
Yeah, so I think it'd be quite special, but I think it's probably a long way off yet. But
yeah,
it's definitely something I sort of mentioned to the SPFL as an option that we should pursue.
You say you want scenes. Do you want 2016 Scottish Cup final scenes?
Yeah, absolutely.
just how has it been dealing with the SPFL, out of curiosity? They get a bit of a bad rap in Scottish football.
Rightly so.
Yeah, do you know what? I think
I know we said finally about 10 minutes ago, so sorry.
Yeah, no, I think that there are definite improvements that need to be made in certain aspects, and we do a lot of our discussions behind the scenes rather than out in the open. And
no,
I think
putting any elbows.
No, and I think ultimately it's a league that probably needs to take the initiative at certain points rather than waiting to see others lead by example and then them jumping on the back of it. But at the same time, you know, the governance of the game is good. I think with the introduction of VAR, it will help as and when that comes into place. But I go back to the actual product, and I know people don't want to call it a product, but the product of the SPFL and the football up here, the atmosphere, the amazing way that people love their football up here and come and watch it and come to stadiums, that's kind of almost a product that's undersold, in my opinion. And therefore, I think there needs to be a lot more work done on the commerciality of the league, which means that all of the clubs get a bigger piece of the pie. And that's why I think it's great that Ron, our owner, is on the board.
Yeah.
Because
he's sorting the ball out.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Any more?
No, I think that's us.
Yes,
just all the product, I know.
Or not.
You may get your dinner tonight.
A lot of people kind of go on about the TV deal. We're not happy with the TV deal, to be honest. We think it's massively undersold, and Scottish football is very, very tribal. I think we preferred the sort of BT coverage because it's a lot broader. But is it a frustration from your point of view that Sky seems to be pretty bad? Like, even basic stuff like getting the logos wrong for teams and the overall courage just doesn't really seem to be there.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, is it undervalued? In my opinion, yes. But equally at the same time, I'm not the one negotiating the deal. Mm. The deal is negotiated centrally.
Yeah.
So that might go back to one of the things that, that we need to be better at as a league,
yeah.
is valuing ourselves a lot higher than we probably do at the moment. We shouldn't be apologetic for what we are. Yeah. We should be proud of what we are. And I know that Neil and others are, but then we should do that. In, when going into negotiations, we should be proud of our product and stand out a little bit more. And I think, I don't want to use the word product because it makes it sound too commercial and corporate.
That's what it is, though.
But ultimately, when you're talking about all of the teams in the league, it is a product that, that, that people want to purchase from a broadcasting perspective and globally. So, yeah, we just need to do a lot more work on standing out from the crowd and making it unique.
I think, did Cinch not pay like double the amount to be on Spurs' sleeve than they did to sponsor the league? And they've got some serious juicy stuff this season. Was it? Was it? So, but Scottish football is what is it? I don't want it to go like English football. No offense to those in the room. I don't want it to go like the English Premiership. I don't like. It still has a uniqueness. It still has. It's 3 o'clock on a Saturday. Felt like for long enough we hadn't been at Easter Road for 3 o'clock on a Saturday due to, well, being decent and being in Europe at the start of the season and stuff, and it still holds that element of uniqueness, and I don't think I'd ever want that. Like you said, the Motherwell game was covered on Sky, and that's the perfect game for them. They should be covering every Hibs Motherwell game if you look at it historically, the but goals. All of a sudden we're seeing Rangers St Mirren on TV instead of a Hibs Hearts game. I don't think it can't be right, but
the old play away, it's on telly. It's frustrating for us because there's a lot more to Scottish people than just
AP. Can I ask you guys a question? What's your views on the recruitment? Because you've asked us loads of questions about recruitment. So I'd love the fans' view or your views on what on the areas around.
I'd love to start. I think
I'm going to pass it to Ian so he can so he can take notes.
I think from my perspective, you're right. I think you used the word remedy. I think there was remedial work that needed done in the Jan Shaft window to just plug the gaps that were there. I think we saw in the Rijeka game at the end of August, Darren McGregor having to come on, come into the side and play a European game, probably less than ideal from our perspective, so there's clear gaps in the squad. I think we've gone some way to addressing some of those gaps, but for me, I think there's been players, unfortunately, who have been in a period where they've been out of form, and Sean's had no choice but to pick players who've not been in form because there's not been that depth in the squad. So from my perspective, I think centre midfield, one, maybe two bodies in there, I think would have been fantastic. I think up top, Kevin Nisbet, since Sean Mooney come in, I've seen a real change in him where I think he's got the bit back between his teeth. I think he's looked brilliant. And the goals just haven't been going for him, for want of a better description. But we've not had anyone to come in and take his place to replace those goals, and they've not been in the team. So I think maybe up top there'd been a body we've got in. And then at the back, I think we've done...
Just a full 11 for Liam, to be honest.
But the difficulty for me Kyle McGinnis got injured in late September, October. And it's one of those if your uncle was your auntie. Because if Kyle McGinnis had just stayed fit, I think we'd been a very, very different team through the January. But we have not replaced the dynamism that he gives in midfield, which, to be honest, we didn't have before we had Kyle McGinnis. So actually putting him in was a completely different piece into that midfield. And there's not a lot of Kyle McGinnis cutting about that you can just go and you can go and sign. He's the missing piece for me.
We just hope he stays fit, to be honest. I think we're all willing to give him time because we know what he can do. He's a very good
football
player. I just
miss singing the song.
Yeah, we miss singing the song and it doesn't feel right when he's not there.
I think what you're saying with the recruitment, I mean, Harry Clark was a player we were all excited about. He's got injured straight away and Harry's obviously not with us tonight. Harry is the most happy, clapping, positive Hibs fan you'll ever meet, and he'd been going off his dinger for 2 years about needing centre-backs. Like, so this window is like, right, we've got two, he was happy, and I think yourself, Greg, as well.
I was probably 3 years, to be honest. That was about 3 years, and it was frustrating because every time in the window we didn't seem to replace a centre-half, it was the same centre-half, sort of. Bad words about them, but we need depth in that area, you know. Centre-halves are going to get booked, they're going to get suspended, so we did need depth, and I was probably a bit critical of the last regime, to be honest, because I just felt like it was an area where they were just totally bypassing. I think we have signed a striker in Melkerson, it will take them time, but same with like Melkerson, Harry Clark, the players are there. We just went to them getting up to speed and getting fit again or whatever, so I don't think you can over kind of estimate or kind of over buy players or get players in just for short term, because it's, as we spoke about earlier, it's pointless.
yeah. because we need these players to have a bit of continuity in the club, and it was 18 months for Harry Clark, so yeah, I'm not one for just replacing players that are injured. We need to allow them the time to come back. So
I thought the window was okay. I'll be honest. When you obviously done your interview last week, even if Boyle stayed, I would have said it was okay. If I'm honest, but I don't think you could have expected much more for January. I think we all accept that we're in a period just now where let's get top four. I think the squad is good enough to get top four, but I still think there's work to be done. I think we all adore the likes of Darren McGregor, Lewis. I mean, I said on the podcast the other week, Lewis Stevenson's a candidate for player of the year when he has played in the last couple of weeks, he has. But there is, and it didn't actually dawn on me until the weekend how young the team was.
Yeah.
It really did click, and I know the manager said that in his interview last week before the game, but I think there's something missing. I think there's some players in the squad just now that probably might fall by the wayside the way the manager wants to play. And Hibs fans talk about play the Hibs way, Hibs class. Well, I think that's the way the manager wants to play. You touched on it earlier. I think fans have to accept that not every pass is going to get pinged in behind the fullback where it was previously. Like, you've got Martin Boyle. At the end of the day, it's an outball. Pop it in the corner, it'll probably get there. But yeah, the window was okay. But I'm excited to see what comes in the summer. Yeah. I think there's trust. I think fans have trust in the club just now to do the right thing and get the right players in. But I guess as a shot of warning, you've seen what it can be like at Easter Road on a match day. So yeah, I think there'll be a lot of pressure on you guys in the window in the summer. If I'm being totally honest, I think fans could be.
I think there's always that pressure. I'll be honest. I gave the window a 3 out of 10.
Just remember that we were going through bad form as well.
Now
we're getting into the actual podcast.
However, for me,
how bad were the previous
one? Oh, you never heard them talk about Graham Matthew.
Don't start me on Matthew.
So
there is rationale behind this.
I thought you said you'd listen January. To the podcast before.
January window. So it was frustrating because I probably looked at things very narrow-minded and seen that we had 10 days to replace Martin Boyle. You can't replace Martin Boyle in 10 days, let's be honest. I think we recorded the podcast not long after.
We'd recorded on transfer deadline day before Jasper had signed.
So there was an element of frustration. The toys were firmly at the pram, like miles away from the pram. So that's where it came from. Looking back, I'd probably give it a 6. I think that's probably a fair reflection. Give it a 7. I think I'd probably give it a 6. Not far away, but yeah, I think Boyle was a massive miss. And I'm guessing your job in the summer is to replace him. Just buy him back.
Just buy him back.
But I think as well, on Martin Boyle, it's good that we've got a first refusal because obviously his wife plays for the club. So I guess we're kind of hoping that he's going out there for a money making exercise and he's going to have a grand home coming. And we're sort of building ourselves up for that, Ian, so there's no pressure there.
I'm just pleased we've doubled your score.
That's kind, man.
But I think when you look at things on the surface, you look at Jasper coming in, Fulham kind of development player, but he gets bums off seats. He is a very exciting player. We've still to see the best of him. He's probably not up to speed fully, but I thought he was very good on Saturday. Yeah. Maybe he did run out of steam towards the end, but
Mitchell
as well, he's direct. Ewan Henderson's a player that seems to pop up everywhere, so
I think we've been surprised by Mitchell. It's unfortunate that he's got his, and not even because of his Hearts connection, but I think we have been quite, I didn't expect him to be that good.
Yeah.
I think maybe Liam, you made a comment, did we think he was going to be here that long term, but I've been pleasantly surprised with him. I said he could get in at the back post, you disagreed, but 2 goals in 6 would say otherwise, but
you should start on left side these football players. But no, I think that we look at players without actually seeing them and judge the transfer window, and that's where I looked at it. And now we've looked at them, we've seen them, we can understand the process, we trust the process. So yeah, 3 was very harsh, but at that point it was.
It's easy for us to go on the podcast on a Monday night when Hibs have just been beat. It's a release for us, and sometimes it brings back emotions that you maybe don't want. Like, yeah. You know, that you get over the game on the Saturday night or whatever, and then you talk about it again on the Monday. And we've taken our own fair share of pelters and all.
Oh, so you can listen back to the Tuesday, like, I was miles off it. So, yeah. I mean, if you want to list the names here, I'll have to chat to you after. So.
Bet you wish you never asked.
Final one for me is, who do you want us to sign?
Oh. What market are we talking?
Yeah. Well, I mean, be realistic, so therefore don't say Messi or Ronaldo, but who have you seen that you
would like to sign? They would try to this style of football.
I think you might be unrealistic now, but you know, a player I would move heaven and hell to get would be Alan Campbell, who went from Motherwell to Luton in the summer. I think just in terms of his technical ability, fantastic. I think the kind of guy he is, first on the training pitch, last off. I think he's now in English Championship, earning Championship money, but he'd be a player I'd be keeping on my radar. In terms of league up here, players...
Jason Kerr, I think,
is
one
of the
Jason Kerr,
Sentiment
that
FC, just saying, Hibs fans.
Hibs fan, big
Hibs
fan.
It's interesting you say that, because we sit and talk after nonsense for an hour every Monday, and throughout January we were talking about players, and I personally think there's not that many standing out in the league. I think we've got a decent squad, a good squad, and... there's no obvious ones, I don't think, in the league. I think Kevin Nisbet felt like an obvious one when we brought him in, and I think we were all very surprised when we paid the money to get him. And I really don't think there's anyone screaming out.
The boy from Millwall, there's a lot of St. Johnston. I quite like look at that Danny McNamara. He was good. Yeah. I don't know if he's a good list here, but I've seen him against Crystal Palace. And, I was very impressed when he was up here. I thought he was very good. He was only up for 6 months, but I thought he had a lot about him in his first year at Millwall in the Championship. So.
It's difficult, but...
because we don't know these players' personalities. I'm sure you go into a lot more detail on personalities and how they act and how they behave. So.
Yeah. To be fair, I've got one every single window. I've predicted a player and we signed every single. Jake Doyle Hayes, when there was no rumours of a signing Doyle Hayes, we signed Doyle Hayes. The window before that, Nisbet, I think.
You're really a job for a job at Hibs.
Player ID, comms, just a jack of all trades, master.
A player in Scotland. Would you have a player in Scotland at you?
A player in Scotland.
It would have been Jandal Fuchs if he hadn't left Dundee United, to be honest. He would have been one I would have looked
at. I pointed to sign Charlie Mulgrew last summer, I'm not going to lie. I think
he's about 75, man.
I know, but I think he's been very, very good for Dundee United. He's been solid. He's a centre half.
For Dundee United.
Left-footed centre half.
I know they've done. I don't want this.
I think he's done very well to be sure.
I like the group. Have you seen the boy Omari Niskanen that plays for Dundee United? Finish winger. Again, another bums off seats kind of player. He would be one that I would. Just because we mentioned Dundee United, he popped in the head. But other than that, I'm kind of struggling.
I quite like
Ben Seagriff, goalie.
Yeah, Ben Seagriff.
Very good.
Yeah. I quite like O'Hara at Motherwell, but he's not really done it since. Yeah. I quite liked him the first time in Scotland, box to box midfielder. But I think what Liam said earlier, we need someone as close to Kyle McGuinness as possible, because, well, we might need to be changing the lyrics to best in the world to Made of Glass or something. But nah, I love Kyle McGuinness, but if we could get a another one, if you could just morph him into that'd be ideal. Anyone at St Mirren? Anyone?
can we stay away from St Mirren? I feel like we've ripped the arse at St Mirren. I feel like we've really ripped the arse at the...
No, look, thank you very much.
Unless there's someone for St Mirren on the list.
Jamie McGrath's gone.
Yeah, well, that's it. Conor Ronan.
Can I just ask that?
Conor Ronan for St Mirren.
Conor Ronan at St Mirren. There you go. Oh, yeah, that's a shout.
Another triple on there, mate.
He's only alone at St Mirren, so... just say.
Guys, thank you very much for joining us, Ian, at last minute as well, so that's much appreciated. Ben, thank you very much.
We're really sorry. Really, really sorry.
No, thanks for having me.
And tell your dad we're really thankful.
But I will be back next Monday, fast approaching 100 episodes as well. So, but thank you for listening, and I will be back next week. Cheers.
Thank you. See bye.
You cheers, guys.